Welcome to the Three Creeks Church podcast. Wherever you are on your spiritual journey, we're glad you're here with us. Today's message comes from a series called The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. A great enemy of the spiritual life in our day is the fact that we're always in a hurry to do everything. The world tells us that we have to move faster. But when you look at the life of Jesus, he moved slower than that. Maybe he was onto something. Let's find out what God has to say about hurry. Thanks for joining us.
So I want to start with something that might feel a little uncomfortable or a little weird, but since you're most likely either watching this at home by yourself or with your community group, I think that you can get used to it with me. So close your eyes, literally close your eyes, and envision something that feels the most restful to you. If I could pipe in some like beach waves right now, I would, because that's what is most restful to me. Sitting in a beach chair, reading a good book with the sun on my skin, that feels amazing right now in the middle of January. But maybe you think of a cabin with a fire and a good cup of coffee. Maybe your mind went to a girls' trip or simply like a night away in a hotel without your kids. I don't know what your mind went to, but I'm sure that it was something as equally as life-giving and joy-filling as what I described. I've had a massage a couple of times in my life. And the very first time was when I was very pregnant with Cooper, and I was large and uncomfortable and very salty about it. And Sweets Joel didn't know what to do with me, and so he handed me a gift card to go and get a massage, which I was very excited about. But I left that experience feeling largely disappointed by it. I had gone in thinking, wow, I have a full hour to rest and relax and to go away from this, having all of my aches and pains gone, and it did not happen. But I largely chalked it up to the fact that I was pregnant and didn't get to receive the full experience of a massage. Fast forward a few years, and I received another gift card to go and get a massage, and went in once again with very high expectations. But pretty much the same exact thing happened. I left not feeling like it was all that that experience is chalked up to be. But this time, as I examined why that was, I really did begin to realize that I put so much expectation on that 1 hour massage experience. I went into that thing, laid there, and thought, I have a full hour, I better make it count. Oh no, I think I only have 50 minutes. Oh no, I think I'm down to 30 minutes. Why am I not relaxed enough? I expected it to be something that it was never going to be for me. And I think a lot of us have that all or nothing mentality when it comes to rest. What if I told you today that it didn't have to be that way? What if I told you that God created something for us that is way more life-giving than any one-hour massage could be? Joel and I, just about a year ago, read The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry by John Mark Comer. In large part, it changed our lives in regards to Sabbath, which is what I get to talk about today. But as many strides that we took in January and February and March, we basically stopped all forward progress and even took steps backwards once the pandemic hit. It really rocked us, as I know it has for a lot of you in pretty much all areas of our lives. I'm telling you that to say that I am a learner alongside of you in regards to this topic. A few months ago, when Joel talked to me about talking about this message, it was right around the time that I realized how much I missed this practice in our lives and how much I needed this practice. And so him asking me to do this really was the push that our family needed to start learning and practicing again this topic of Sabbath. And so what I want to do for you today is I want to talk about what this word means. I hope that we can get a correct understanding of this word and then to see the practical implications in our lives today. Sabbath, I'm not sure what you think of when you hear that word. I'm sure that some of you are sitting there nervously thinking that I'm going to tell you that you can't play cards or mow your lawn on Sundays. My goal here is to give you a correct understanding of this word and then to hopefully give you some ways to practically apply it to your life. Sabbath is actually a Hebrew word in the Bible. It's Shabbat, and it means literally to stop. We first see this word in the creation accounts as God creates the world. He creates stars and plants and animals and ends on the sixth day with the culmination of mankind. And then we get to the seventh day, and Genesis 2:3 says this, "Then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done." So with the creation of the world, God rested. He literally wove into the fabric of creation a work 6 days and rest on the Sabbath day structure. But do we do this? Is this something that we practice in our lives, or is this beneath us? Can I just remind you that God rested. Moving on, we go to the Exodus story. And if you were with us, the last few months, we went through a series called Clarity when we walked through the whole Bible. We're at the point in the Bible where God has just brought the Israelite people out of Egypt and out of slavery and captivity. And as he is starting to reform this nation, one of the first things that he has the people do is listen to Moses after he had been up on Mount Sinai to receive the Ten Commandments and tell it to the people of Israel. We find things on there such as, do not steal, do not murder, do not commit idolatry. But in that list, we find only one spiritual discipline. And it is, you guessed it, Sabbath. To stop and to rest. Exodus 20, 8 through 11 says this, "Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your manservant or maidservant, nor your animals, nor the alien within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy." So not only is the Sabbath the only spiritual discipline that we find in the Ten Commandments, it's the only one that has a why attached to it. Did you catch that? Jesus is reminding them that he rested at the creation of the world. He's reminding them that this was the rhythm that he set into the creation of the world. Fast forward then about 40 years, and we find the people of Israel have been wandering in the wilderness for, like I said, 40 years. And Jesus realizes that the people of Israel need a refresher course. So he asks Moses to literally tell them once again those 10 commandments. Most of these people were not at the first reading of the Ten Commandments. Or if they were, they were likely young enough to not really remember it. So in Deuteronomy 5:15, it says this, "Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath day." First things first, God changed the word remember to observe. I realize that seems like a really small thing, but I want us to think about it like this. What's the difference in when you remember a holiday versus observing a holiday? Observing means that you have to prepare for it. You have to plan for it. You have to be intentional about it to actually enjoy that day. And that's exactly what God is telling the Israelites of that day, but more about that later. Did you catch the second part that was a little different? The why had changed as well. Instead of God reminding them about the creation of the world, he's taking them back to their captivity in Egypt. He's reminding them of what they came from, which was slavery. Back 40 years ago when they first got the Ten Commandments, they didn't need to be told how good of a deal a day off was. You really think they were given a 401k and paid vacation time as slaves? Obviously not. But we're 40 years removed from that moment. We're 40 years from the memories and the pain that they experienced as slaves. And they've become pretty apathetic to the idea of a Sabbath. And God wants to remind them of that. Now, hear me say this. I do not in any way want to minimize slavery by comparing it to our world today. Obviously, we are far from that. But I do think that there are some comparisons that we should at least note. How many of us are slaves to our work? How many of us have a really hard time turning work off, whatever form that may be, for one whole day? How many of you fail to let the buzz go on your phone and want to pick it up every second that it makes a notification? How many of us have taken a full day from looking at our emails, making a phone call, or even giving our minds the mental space to think through work things? Or maybe what's even worse, how many of you have those same expectations for the people that you employ or work alongside of? You don't need to be told that our world is hurried. And I would argue that the hurriedness of our world is something that we have just accepted, that we've become okay with. But should that be okay to us? If you think the command of Sabbath was for those people at that time, I would like for you to think differently. Honestly, our culture rewards those that stiff-arm the concept of rest. I'll sleep or rest when I'm dead. We hear that kind of stuff and it's accepted and it's even applauded. Those are the people that sometimes even make it further than the rest of us. But I'm here to remind you and tell you that a day off is not only a good thing, but it is a gift. Sabbath is such an interesting thing to talk about, largely because the church has either forgotten about it or has misused it. I'm sure that there are some of you listening that grew up in a pretty legalistic church culture, and your thought of Sabbath has been, oh wait, this is the day where I just can't do the things that I want to do. This is the day where I just sit in church all day and I read my Bible and pray and sing worship songs for 12 hours in a row. I want to tell you that I don't think that that is what Sabbath is. But I also want you to hear that Sabbath is not some outdated part of the Bible that we don't really practice anymore. Ultimately, what I want to convince you of today is that Sabbath is a life-giving principle that has been gifted to us as a way to break down the addiction of accomplishments and accumulation. So then moving on to the New Testament, we come to the book of Mark, and Jesus is actually being grilled by the Pharisees on what he was doing and not doing on this day. In Mark chapter 2, verse 27, Jesus says this, "The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath." So there are two things to note here. First of all, Jesus had every opportunity to say that Sabbath was no longer a thing. He didn't say that. Sabbath is still very much a thing that he wants us to practice. Second, and I would say even more importantly, Jesus really does flip the concept of Sabbath on top of its head, especially as he's talking to these Pharisees. He says that Sabbath is for us. Not the other way around. He wants them to understand that it is a gift from the Creator to the creation. It's something that has been given to us. So no matter if when you hear the word Sabbath, it brings up these feelings of oppression and legalism, or maybe if it's just a totally new concept to you, I want all of us to understand it is that Sabbath is a gift for you. I said at one point in this message that the word Shabbat is translated to stop, which is true. It actually has a dual meaning, though, of both to stop and to delight. God wants us to delight in this day. In my years growing up as a Christian, I've heard a handful of messages on this topic. But honestly, what would happen is that I would listen to them and feel convicted, but then wouldn't really change much in my life. And then I would go on feeling guilty until I heard the next message on this topic. But I've realized in the last year that I missed that this was a gift for us and not a command to follow. And maybe that's true of you today. As John Mark Comer says in his book, the Sabbath is a way for us to delight in the world, in our lives in it, and above all, in God himself. And I want you to think through that and keep that in mind as I go on to explain more of the application of how this can look in our lives. At this point, you might be intrigued, but a little confused of how it can actually play out in your life, especially those of us with little kids who can often be the antithesis of rest. But let me ask you this second question. What can you do for a full 24 hours that can fill you with a deep, throbbing joy? As I said earlier, Sabbath shouldn't necessarily fill you with thoughts of a 12-hour prayer vigil and Bible reading. But I would also be failing you to not say that those things should fill you with joy. I would ask you to consider, how can you best connect with the Lord on this day? We believe that the Bible is God's word to us and to the church, and so it should be something that we are spending time in. It should be at the top of the priority list when we consider our day of rest. What would it look like to spend a full amount of time reading God's word with nothing else on the to-do list? What would happen if that was the only thing for the agenda of the day? Man, that fills me with joy. What other things help you to connect to the Lord? Maybe it is singing worship songs, or walking in nature, or having these deep, intimate conversations with people that know you best. But first and foremost, I want you to consider how you can best connect with the Lord. How can that be a source of joy within this day? I wrestled with how much to share with you personally about what this day looks like for the Trainer family. I realize that we are different people, likely in maybe different seasons of our lives, but I'm going to assume that you are a smart person that can determine what things to take with a grain of salt. And I really hope that this can just spur you on and inspire you to best consider how this day can look for you. Because really, that's what kind of happened for us. After we read this book, we gained ideas from that. But then I read a lot more. I listened to podcasts. I talked with other people who have been practicing this day for a lot longer than I have. And it was some of those things that we kind of stole from them. And then we created some of our own family rhythms for this day. So for the Trainer family, our Sabbath starts Friday night and goes until Saturday night. It starts with a candlelit dinner with our family, and we go around the circle and we talk about the things that we most love and admire about each of the family members sitting next to us. Judah normally says something about how he loves to wrestle or play with us, but the kids love it and they look forward to this time truly every week. And if you want to have any kind of accountability in your life, I would encourage you to tell your strong firstborn four-year-old your plan, because they will definitely keep you to it. Cooper, seriously, she asks when Sabbath dinner is days before our Friday night dinner because they so look forward to this night. But in all seriousness, the physical action of lighting candles has been key for us. It's been key for our kids and key for Joel and I personally as like a physical reminder that this day is different, that it's set apart. And if I have learned anything within this last year, it is this. If you don't do something to plan and prepare for this day, it just won't happen. Saturday is then filled with a whole bunch of things that are joy-filling and life-giving. I will tell you something that is the antithesis of that, and it's dishes and housework and laundry. I hate those things. And so we have made a commitment to not do those things on that day. We eat all of our meals on paper plates. I make things that are pretty simple and have easy cleanup, like frozen waffles and peanut butter and jelly. We stack any kinds of dishes that we do have in the sink. I don't do laundry. I don't vacuum the floors. I try and stay as clear from that as possible. It took me a second for this to become okay. I definitely wouldn't call myself a clean freak, but I do like things in their place and in order. And so it took me a second to allow this to actually feel restful. But I will say that once I claimed this over this day, it became something that I was okay with. I will say too that it also has taken a lot of intentionality. It takes intentionality to have the dishwasher clean and free of dishes so that I can load all of it up on Saturday night after our Sabbath is done. I have to think through if there's laundry that needs to be had on Saturday or Sunday and get it done ahead of time. I work hard to clean our house and have everything in its place on Friday so that Saturday actually does feel restful for me. That I can sit down and not just be looking at the piles of dirty laundry in front of me. Because Joel has Sunday as a work day, Friday is actually his second day off. And that really has become a day of work for us. It's our day when we do work around the house. It's when I schedule doctor's appointments and run errands. We do those things on Friday because we know that Sabbath is coming. And because we love our Sabbath and we want to honor it, and we plan hard and prepare hard in order to observe that day. I try and fail, and I've tried again as much as possible to turn off my phone for that day. We have friends that literally turn their phone off for a full 24 hours. And while we haven't gone to that extreme, we do try and use our phone as little as possible. I try and stay off social media. I don't pull up my emails. I use it only when I absolutely need to. But I would ask you to consider what that would look like for you. How freeing would it be to know that you're not going to be looking at work emails on that day? How freeing would it be, how joy-filling and life-giving would it be for you to know that your phone is away for that day? I just told you that I want you to make this day your own. But I also want to challenge every single person to consider this one and to ask what it would look like for you and for your family if there was a day every week where you were on your phone. Nap time is very precious with little kids. That remains the same even for this day, but even more so. Because I've taken all kinds of housework off the table, it's then my time where I get to sit down and read a book or drink an afternoon cup of coffee or work out. I get to do things that give me joy during this time without the talking in the back of my head that I should be doing something else. This is what I'm doing on that day. This is what I should be doing, resting. Now, this day doesn't look like this every week, but I can say that even the small steps we've taken towards this have been so life-giving for our family. And I can honestly say that I really do view this day now as a gift from God and not a command to follow. And I want you to consider what that will look like for you as well. Now, obviously, if you have kids, you can't be totally void of all responsibility, but I would like you to think through, how can this day be restful for me? Maybe it's a conversation with a spouse to say, how can we work together to gift time to one another for this day to be filled with rest? Maybe the most restful thing for you is to exercise a gift of hospitality and to throw a huge party, to have tons of people to your house, make food for them, host them. But maybe the exact opposite thing is true for you. Maybe this day needs to be void of all human interaction as much as possible. Maybe you need to start saying no to things on this day, and you need to just have a quiet day at home. I don't know, obviously, what this looks like for you, but I know the Lord does, and I would ask you to pray about it. I'm excited for those of you that are in a community group, because I think that this can be some really great, deep conversation that can be had with one another. Talk to people that know you best. Talk through and process, what are those things that fill you with joy in your life? How best can you connect to the Lord on this day? I couldn't think of a better way to end this message than to point you to Jesus and to the gospel. I just spent the last 30 minutes or so trying to convince you that the Sabbath is a free gift to you from the creator of the world. And isn't that so at the heart of our God? That he came from heaven to earth and lived a perfect, sinless life to then die for us and rise again so that we can have life with him. The gift of salvation, it's free, and all we have to do is receive it. That's so our God. That's so good of him to want to give that to us. And not only that, but he wants to gift us with a day off. He created us to need this, and he wants it for you. And at the end of the day, I hope that I just get to remind you of it. I remind you of the fact that we get to know a really good God that gifts us with things like a Sabbath and gifts us with the free gift of salvation. Thanks for being with me today.
Thanks for listening. For more information about Three Creeks Church, community groups, serving on a team, or giving online, visit threecreekschurch.com.